It's time for Capital Thinking, where we analyze the key policy, political, legal, and business issues that will shape America's future. Live from Washington, D.C., this is your unfiltered tour of the halls of power. Now, here's your host, Kevin O'Neill.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to the show. After Labor Day, America is shaking off its summer vacation and getting back to work. President Obama is putting the finishing touches on a major speech designed to stimulate the job market, and we're going to hear about that tonight before the NFL season kicks off. So we thought this would be a great episode to sit and visit with our business development gurus, our professional development gurus for the lawyers who listen, and talk a little bit about what you need to do here in the fall to pump up your own career. And we're going to spend about 45 minutes doing that, and then we'll talk a little bit at the end about the debate winners and losers from last night's presidential debate at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. I've got some great thoughts on that. But joining us first is Cordell Parvin, who is a frequent guest here on the show and a longtime, very successful transportation and construction attorney throughout the United States, who went on to found a very successful business coaching lawyers on how to maximize their professional development and personal happiness. Cordell, welcome back to the show. Congratulations to your Virginia Tech Hokies, who start off the season 1-0. And I want to start a little bit by talking about some of your recent journeys around the country, to talk a little bit about blogging and social media. And I'll pick on you a little bit because, Cordell, you're of an age and a look that I would suspect you would say, what's Twitter? What's the internets? But you really are very experienced of what's going on in connecting the legal world to new media. So tell me a little bit about your viewpoint on why an experienced and seasoned lawyer should be in touch with their social media and blogging side.
Kevin, that's a great question. One of the big law firms hired me to go across country and speak to their various offices on blogging and social media. And I kidded with the person who asked me to do it, and I said, the only reason you selected me was because of the color of my hair and figuring that your lawyers over 40 would actually show up and listen. So to answer your question, let me put it in the context of two stories. The first story is when I went across country for that law firm. I was sitting with the litigation practice group leaders, and one of them said to me, Cordell, suppose we decide we're not going to do blogging, we're not doing any social media, would we be behind our competitors in 5 years? And I felt like that was just putting the ball on the tee for me to hit it. I said, suppose in the mid-90s, you had gone to firm management and said, we don't want litigation to be on the website, and we're not going to use email. Do you think in 5 years you would be behind competitors? Well, they had to acknowledge that they would have been. And so I said, blogging and social media is, in 2011, what websites and email were in the 90s.
Interesting.
I also pointed out that if we did a Google search for litigation and the city that they were in, I could not find their firm on the first four pages of Google. And I said, in-house lawyers aren't going four pages looking for a firm. And then the third point I made to them was, I said, you guys actually write things, right? Oh, yes, yes. It took 7 clicks on their website to get to anything the litigation group had written. So it was no wonder Google wasn't finding them. My second story, in the early 80s, President Reagan signed the Surface Transportation Act into law, and a law changed that was very important for highway contractors. I started writing about it. I created a guide. I was on panels all across the United States. The largest client I ever had as a lawyer called me and asked me to handle a matter. And I, at the end of the conversation, I said, how did you find me? And the in-house lawyer said, we called the Federal Highway Administration. We talked to an in-house lawyer there who said the government couldn't help, but Cordell Parvin was the person to hire. My point is, think about all the luck that went into getting hired. You know, I had to write and speak. I had to be on the panel with that lawyer. The in-house lawyer actually had to call that lawyer. If he had called the lawyer next door, I wouldn't have been asked to help them. Today, I could have had all that material on the internet, and someone doing a Google search for the subject matter would have found it. So to answer your question, blogging and social media takes a lot of the luck out of business development and being accessible to clients.
Very good. And so you talked a little bit about blogging, and look, I'll tell you, we had a guy on from LexBlog a few weeks ago, and I'm very interested in trying to figure out, you know, should I get in a blog, and he's done a great job of convincing me. I've just got to figure out a couple things when I'm going to squeeze that in the next few months, but there's so many out there, Cordell, and we spend a lot of time talking to him about differentiating yourself, but talk to me about the advice you give to lawyers as practitioners and using a blog to differentiate themselves from the competition.
Well, I think about 90-plus percent of the lawyer blogs that are out there are boring. People don't read them. They're written like the lawyer was writing a brief for a judge rather than writing something for an audience. The way to differentiate is first to find subject matter that your clients care about. Your clients don't care about what you do in public policy. They care about how what you do solves their problems, helps them achieve opportunities, and helps them deal with changes that occur. So finding the topic that really is important to clients is the starting point. The second point is you've got to write it in a way that people will want to read it. You know, you're familiar, Kevin, with RSS readers, and RSS readers will show people only the headline of the blog post. If I'm not interested in the headline, I don't go any further. If I'm not interested in the first paragraph, I don't go any further. The first paragraph has got to be like a journalist. Don't bury the lead. So, and then you need to use social media to distribute it. Those three main points.
Interesting. Well, you know, sticking with social media, so one of the things I was doing on vacation was kind of catching up on some things, and I pumped up my LinkedIn connections by really actively searching out some folks. I got over 500 connections sometime in the last couple of weeks. I felt like I, you know, deserve some sort of merit badge or something on LinkedIn. But I still struggle, Cordell. I don't use that as much as a Facebook or a Twitter. I think it's good to go on and figure out somebody's email address. But tell me a little bit more about how people can really take advantage of a site like that from a legal professional standpoint.
I think the first thing is it's a great way to stay in touch with old contacts. For example, yesterday I was just scrolling down my LinkedIn page, and I saw that my former minister had been doing something in his ministry. Well, I just sent him a message on LinkedIn, and I said, Scott, I haven't talked to you in a long time. I just want to catch up, see how you're doing. Well, we're going to have lunch next week. I wouldn't have thought of him but for just scrolling down on LinkedIn. So I think that's a starting point. You just scroll down, see what people are doing, comment, reach out to them. If they have a new position in-house or in another law firm, you would reach out to them that way. I think another thing is to have a group on LinkedIn. I have a coaching group on LinkedIn that lawyers on this call are welcome to join. I also participate in groups on LinkedIn on professional development and marketing the law firm, et cetera. So it's a place to see what's going on. It's a place to put my content, my blog posts, and so that's very valuable. I think it's very important when you have a LinkedIn profile that it be as complete as possible. I don't link to people who don't have their photo on their profile. I think it shows they don't care, and so I don't do that. I also take relationships, whether it's from LinkedIn or Twitter, either one. The online relationships I get, I end up meeting the people offline when I'm in their particular city. So that's a perfect opportunity to connect with someone in person when you're in their city, or even, you know, I've met people on LinkedIn and Twitter who are right here in Dallas who I never knew before LinkedIn and Twitter, and then I connect with them. So that's how I use it.
Interesting. Well, I get, Cordell, I got about 90 seconds left. Let's talk about Twitter. How are people using it effectively as lawyers?
Well, I think what they're doing is they're providing valuable content and they're connecting to lots of people. And one example is a lawyer who gets up every morning, uses his iPad to find content that he thinks valuable to clients, and then he starts tweeting it. I know when he's working out because I get all these tweets, and what it is, it's content that he believes people will find valuable, and that's how he effectively uses it.
And what about examples of really bad ways to use it as a lawyer?
Talking about yourself and trying to market yourself, that no one cares. I mean, people want to learn. They don't want to know how wonderful you think you are.
Interesting. Well, Cordell, we're going to talk to Dr. Cindy in a minute here after the break, and then we're going to bring you guys back together and mix it up to get some advice from both of you. But real fast, hit people with your email address and website address if people want to know more about you.
Well, my blog is cordellblog.com. My email is cparvin, P-A-R-V-I-N, at cordellparvin.com.
Great. Well, we've had Cordell Parvin on. We're going to have him on later in the show. We're going to be back with Dr. Cindy to continue our discussion on professional development for lawyers right after this commercial break.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
If you find yourself under the Klieg lights of a government investigation, you want experience on your side. Patton Boggs has 46 years of it. We've handled some of the biggest white-collar crime cases. Put that experience to work for you.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
It's all about action.
Touchdown!
Scores.
Taking a look at the NBA tonight.
Highlights.
He's broken loose. He's at the 30.
And headlines.
Big trade in the NFL this afternoon.
When you are looking to talk sports, look no further than the Voice America Sports Network. We bring you some of the biggest names and all the sports news you can handle, whether it's basketball.
Off the glass.
Football.
Come on. Football.
Golf. Racing. Or the Olympics. We've got you covered. We'll even cover tailgating. Tune in to the Voice America Sports Network. It's all things sports.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Hear ye, hear ye. The House will come to order.
Having trouble sorting out what's going on Capitol Hill? Patton Boggs can cut through it all. We've got the insight, the know-how, the connections to navigate. Patton Boggs. Straight, unfiltered. Patton Boggs, a bipartisan voice with knowledge and 46 years of experience.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Live from Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's K-O-Neill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
All right, welcome back. We are continuing our discussion of professional development this hour, and our guest is a favorite of the show, is along with Cordell, who was on earlier, Dr. Cindy Pladsiewicz. A very interesting career for Dr. Pladsiewicz. She's had the experience of being a partner at one of the nation's leading law firms. She's also spent more than a decade in private practice as a clinical psychologist, which means she knows just how crazy those attorneys that she works with could be. She spent some time in a role as a chief development officer for a major law firm and has also been an adjunct professor. And now basically she does professional development, helping attorneys and other high-powered professionals maximize their personal development and their personal satisfaction. Dr. Cindy, welcome back. I want to start talking about women's issues in the legal world, and you want to talk a little bit, I know, about some of the women's initiatives that leading law firms have. Why do they have those, and tell us a little bit about them.
Well, Kevin, it's always great to be back, and I just have to congratulate you on your pronunciation of my last name. Really elegant.
I'm getting it tattooed, so I won't forget.
Well, I'm impressed. I'm just delighted to be here to talk today about women's initiatives, because this is just near and dear to my heart. Women's initiatives are groups within law firms that are composed, if it's done well, of women and men, not just women. And they really come together to achieve goals that are important to law firms, such as recruiting and retaining women attorneys, advancing women attorneys to leadership, supporting the firm's efforts to advance diversity, and clients' goals in this regard, because as most lawyers know, their clients care more and more about women being on client teams and in positions of leadership in the firm for good reason. So firms are using the Women's Initiative as a way to accomplish these goals and come together, and I'd actually like to call it a people initiative, because I see men, attorneys and firms who have daughters, who have spouses, and proteges really care about this issue as much as many of the women lawyers do.
Yes, men are people too. I think that's good that you've acknowledged that, Dr. Cindy. I do think it's a challenge. Big law firms have they care a great deal about this issue, and I think many times they're perplexed about it. One of the things I know you look at is really what role women play inside the marketplace of these big firms, and are they stepping up and getting the chance to be a practice group leader, a department chair, a managing partner, you know, on the board of directors or whatever that's called for a law firm, the people that make the decisions and sort of guide the strategic direction of a firm. What does your research tell you about women's representation in those leadership positions, and what does that bode for the future of the legal profession?
Well, Kevin, there's some really thorough research out there, and the news is not as good as we'd like it to be. The reality is that in law firms, women represent about 17% of equity partners, and really about that percent or even less of top leadership. And it's a problem. I will say, to be fair to law firms, these statistics carry through into companies as well, or into the military and into other organizations. So really, if you look across the board right now at legal organizations and non-legal organizations, at the very top leadership levels, women are right around that 17% mark. That's true in law firms, too.
Well, and I know if I asked this question to my wife, she would hit me and say the answer is obvious. But you know, your reasoning for why it's important for leading law firms to have a mix of men and women in leadership. Again, my wife would say it's so that the organization can continue to thrive, because the women will save the men from themselves. But I'm sure there's a more complex answer than that.
Well, I really like your wife's answer, because in a nutshell, that's pretty correct. What we know, there's just some great research out from the consulting firm McKinsey, and also from Catalyst, that looks at how companies and firms perform. So for a lot of people, the first thing they may go to is profitability. What makes a company or a firm profitable? What McKinsey discovered in 2007 is that there is a tipping point when it comes to women in top leadership. And when a company or a firm has about 30% of women in top leadership, and as we discussed, right now it's under 20%. When they get to that tipping point, the companies perform better, and they perform better on really hard measurements like return on equity and operating results and even stock price when you're talking about public companies. And so across the board, we see profitability, although that's near and dear to I think, any business person's heart or lawyer's heart. But there's also some, you know, what underlies that. And it, of course, it's not that women contribute something more than men, but rather women contribute something different than men.
Well, and, so the challenge is, though, how you get, I mean, you've been in a law firm. It's a long slog to make partner, let alone these days make equity partner, let alone get a seat at a leadership table. And so what advice do you give to women about how to chart a path that includes that as a career option down the line when it's a long line to get to?
Yeah, it is a long line to get to. And I think a part of it, Kevin, has to do with men. Right now we know that women are twice as likely, for example, to have a spouse that's working full-time as opposed to a male lawyer. And so it's really important, I think, as they look ahead to look at having the support in place that they need if a woman lawyer has children to make that work. And I think as firms what we can do is offer some flexibility for men and women as parents so that they have some alternate tracks to get to the top and have some other ways to go that provide opportunities to be able to balance.
Very interesting. And talk to me about the generational viewpoint. I know there was, to the extent that things are good now, it's only because a lot of people, a lot of women in the last 30 years sort of pioneered the partnership experience at major law firms and broke through the glass ceiling. I mean, you know, the story goes that Sandra Day O'Connor finished second in her Stanford Law School class and couldn't get a job except as a legal secretary when she came out of law school. And while it's hard to imagine that happening today, that wasn't, frankly, that long ago in our history. Does that really skew the viewpoint that more experienced female attorneys might have in the workplace and about how to help the next generation succeed?
You know, it really can. We think about women lawyers as being sort of this homogenous group, but there's really, I see some differences among generations. And I love, there's a women's leadership expert named Ann Doyle who kind of broke women into different categories, and she calls those senior women that broke down the doors pioneering interlopers. And I think a lot of these are baby boomers and probably at the older end of the baby boomer generation who really knew exactly what they were getting into. They had to break down some doors, and one of the younger lawyers referred to battle axes. And since I'm in that group, I don't want to. I'd rather not claim that name, and I'd probably not very, very accurate. But pioneering interloper, I like that name because the reality is for a lot of those women, it did take storming the beaches to get into firms. The younger lawyers, if you look at what's called Gen X, these are people that are born like 1965 to 1979. These women, my friend Ann Doyle talks about as being influential insiders, and a lot of these are the women who sort of came in and learned the system and how to adapt to firm environments. But what we're seeing now with the most recent generation coming in, and I think, Kevin, you'll probably be seeing it at your firm if you haven't already, is that for lawyers approximately born around 1980 or after, men or women, but here we're talking about women, they're very much looking to do things their way. They're innovators. And what I've seen happen with my clients that I consult with and with firms where I've worked is that these lawyers are quicker to leave, and they're quicker to go out and do something different and say, this isn't what I want. So I think to keep that talent in the pool, we're going to have to make some changes.
Yeah, it's an interesting dichotomy. If you read, you know, Malcolm Gladwell and his theory that you take 10,000 hours to master anything, well, that compares up fairly well with the associate track at most big law firms today. In terms of time you're going to spend, actually, it's probably a lot more than 10,000 hours. But that generation that's coming in, they're a right now generation. They're texters, they're internet users, you know, and everything happens very fast. And 8 to 10 years looks like a heck of a long way out on their career.
It really does for them. And interestingly, we're talking about women. This applies to men, though, as well. You've also got that group in the middle, the people born between 65 and 79 that have been waiting a long time. And feel like they, you know, they're still waiting in line to take some leadership away from us baby boomers, Cordell and I, that are hanging around, and much
we're
less
push you all off
young ones coming up.
Don't let us buy. Don't let us cook a meal for your generation. who might steal your key to the executive washroom. Well, Dr. Cindy, I got a break to make the network some money here, but we're going to bring Cordell back and you back, talk a little bit about client development and coaching programs here after the break. So, folks, keep it here on Capital Thinking. We'll be right back.
The market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
What's your name worth? The loss of a single patent, trademark, or copyright can cost millions. Make sure your intellectual property is protected. Trust Patton Boggs to manage and protect your most important assets.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
Technology is changing the way we live our lives and how we do business. On CIO Talk Radio, we talk about the benefits of technology and the great things it allows us to do, as well as its risks. Heard every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, Sunjo Gall interviews business leaders and other experts that are shaping the way we use technology. To learn more about the show, visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Keep up with the changing world of technology and listen to CIO Talk Radio with Sunjo Gall. Listen in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, right here on Voice America Business.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
From Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
All right, welcome back to Capital Thinking. We're having a great discussion about professional development for attorneys. Our guests this hour, Cordell Parvin from Dallas, Texas, who runs coaching programs for lawyers after a very successful legal career himself, and Dr. Cindy Pladsiewicz, Dr. Cindy as we like to call her, who's both a clinical psychologist and a recovering attorney as well, and spends a lot of her time coaching attorneys and high-performing professionals. So I want to talk to you guys in this segment a little bit about client development and how you coach people in that, because I know both of you really believe that much like any sort of athletic ability, it's something you can acquire. It's not something you have to be naturally born with. And I know you both spend a lot of time professionally advising law firms on how to do these things now that they've gone from a sense that, hey, anything goes, everyone's on their own, to really mentoring people. So Cordell, let me start with you, and how do you start your conversations with the legal community about the benefits of this this sort of coaching development program?
Well, I think the easiest thing, Kevin, is to say it increases revenue. The people who are in leadership in law firms, including your firm, you know, they want to find ways to increase revenue, and they also want to change the culture of the firm and have lawyers be more cognizant of client development and business development and being more valuable to clients. So those two ways are things that we talk about. The other important thing is for client development, you talked earlier with Cindy about the 10,000 hours. One-shot programs, whether they're short or long, do not work. People do not change. Coaching is a tool that enables people to change what they've been doing over time so that hopefully business development and client development will become a habit.
Very good. Cindy, you have anything to add on that?
Well, as always, I agree with Cordell on just about everything he says, and I just what I would chime in on is that this, it doesn't happen overnight. One size doesn't fit all. For people, for lawyers to make this kind of a change takes a lot of commitment on a firm's part.
See, that's what's wrong with this show. I need it to be more like Crossfire, where you vehemently disagree with everything Cordell has stated and the premise of his answer altogether. This complimenting him and agreeing, it's turning my stomach almost, Dr. Cindy. It will have a hard time getting Cordell's head in the doorway here.
I'll see what I can do for you on the next question.
All right, well, fair enough. Well, so you got a program going, Cordell and Cindy, at a place. And again, I compare it to athletic skill. Having gone through the experience with Cordell and having learned a lot, to me, I've always equated it to a trainer. You know, you can have a trainer, but you still have to show up to exercise. So, Cordell, talk to me about the keys to success if you're a participant or the keys to success from the firm's perspective.
Well, I think the firm has got to pick the best people. You're a great example. In your coaching group at Patton Boggs, you probably needed coaching the least. You probably put the most into it, and you got the most out of it. So selecting people that are high performers who are self-motivated is a key. I think the second thing I've learned is we need a group dynamic and an individual dynamic. So the group dynamic is the accountability. It's part of the trainer thing that you're mentioning. The individual dynamic recognizes what Cindy said earlier, and that is each person is different. What's going to work for one is going to be different than what's going to work for another. But the key is picking the right people who are motivated to get better.
Cindy?
Okay, Kevin, I promised you some dissent.
Come on!
Okay, so I'll bring it on. Okay, so the concern about what Cordell has said is who are the best people? And
right.
I think a lot of times we tend to think the people who are the best are the people who look like us, whether that is gender or age or race, et cetera.
Or
and so, and I'll have to back up. That's not, Cordell is, I think, has done a great job integrating this into to what he does. But firms have to really be careful that they don't assume the best person is going to be a guy or is going to be someone who's in a majority ethnically. Because in reality, you've got to have everybody at the table. And I've seen firms lose very big major clients who said, we want a woman on your client service team, and the firms didn't respond. And, yeah. and have lost clients for that reason.
Or they didn't have somebody in the pipeline that they'd been grooming for a few years to do that.
Exactly. And I think that's what you've hit upon, Kevin, is really important. From day one, you've got to start getting people to understand these skills, and you've got to include everybody in that effort.
Well, I know that much like the great successful rock duos of the 80s, Hall & Oates and whatnot, you all work together on occasion, but also work apart. So, Cindy, talk to me about how what the two of you do complement one another in a client development coaching program.
Well, I think what's really fun when I get the opportunity to work with Cordell is that he has this incredible content, social media. He has been out there, he's been a rainmaker, and so he's got the content to tell people what to do. What I love to do is to make that fit for the individual person. So I use an instrument put out by the Gallup Corporation, it's called StrengthsFinder, and we really look at what is an individual lawyer's strength so that everybody's business plan is keyed to what they do best. Because if you don't love it, if it's not natural for you, if it doesn't fit with who you are and feel really authentic, then it's no fun, and it can almost just feel sort of bad to develop clients in a way that doesn't fit with your personality.
So if you think of professional development for lawyers and client development as the decathlon, as an athletic event, your advice really is focus on the events you do well and maximize your score in those events to offset the ones you don't care as much about or aren't as good at.
Right. And you can look around your firm, Kevin. I mean, there are lawyers there who are quiet and who are just excellent at what they do and who have a great book of business. And you have other lawyers who are just extroverted, handshaking, cocktail party kind of folks, and they have a great book of business. But the key is that each one of those lawyers along the way figured out what they were good at and stuck to their knitting, so to speak.
So, Cordell, I was one of those introverts that you managed to draw out a little
bit.
What do you have to add to Dr. Cindy's thoughts about how you work together and complement one another?
Well, the lawyers, when they first start with me, they check in with Cindy on StrengthsFinder. And that starting point gives them a better idea of where to focus their attention. And so it's made it ever so much easier to figure out what's going to work best for each lawyer by them taking the StrengthsFinder survey and Cindy having an hour-long session with them. I think in many cases, people who are introverted have been told by senior lawyers, you have to be a networker, you have to do it the way I did it. And that's not true at all. I mean, each person is unique and different. So on the individual coaching basis, the sessions with Cindy proved to be invaluable in terms of the lawyer figuring out which direction to go in, and then I can help them in that direction.
So, Cindy, we talked in the last segment a lot about women's initiatives at law firms and what they're doing to build that pipeline and give opportunities for women to have seats at the leadership table. In the client development programs that you're working with, what do you do? How do you reach out to women to help make that happen? And
how
related to that, is business development for women any different than it is for men?
You know, sometimes it is. Sometimes women are great multitaskers. Your wife may have told you that, and it's true that our brains are wired a little differently. So women a lot of times are multitasking a lot more things when it relates to family and other. And so a lot of women work on business development in a way that may allow them to do things with clients and their families, so that they can have their family there. Sometimes women have to get past some socializations, about I find sometimes they're less likely to want to toot their own horn, so to speak. And, you know, no one likes to hear too much of that, but really a little bit of it is necessary for people to understand and to know what you can do for them and how you can help them. I think women, it's a little harder for them to actually go out and ask someone for business sometimes, and there's a real need to get past that. So I think they have to work a little bit more on those issues. And I'll tell you one more thing, Kevin. Sometimes issues get sticky cross-gender either way. So I've had any number of stories from women who have, and this is truly an issue, women lawyers who say, can I ask a male client to dinner? Because sometimes that can be misunderstood. So
sure.
Unfortunately, there's still some issues out there that can create problems there, too.
Absolutely. Cordell, anything to add? We've got about a minute or so to wrap up here.
Well, I used to always believe, and I still believe, that women are innately better prepared for client development. They ask great questions. They listen more intently. They're empathetic. Surveys show us that. And so I think women are very well suited for business development. Cindy's made a great point of some of the challenges that they face. I think one of the other challenges is that many women lawyers don't realize how really great they are. They have less confidence in themselves, and then you have some male lawyers who are making complete fools of themselves without knowing it because they have too much confidence. So I think women have a great opportunity to progress with coaching because it enables them to see where their real skill sets are and to develop those skills.
Well, real fast wrapping up, Dr. Cindy, can you hit us with your web address, and then Cordell will give you one more chance to throw out your web address, and we'll go from there.
Sure. I'm at professionaldevelopmentperspectives.com, professionaldevelopmentperspectives.com, and you can email me through that website as well.
Cordell?
CordellBlog.com is my blog.
Very good. Well, always a delight to have Cordell and Dr. Cindy on to talk about professional development. We're going to talk about developments at the presidential level with the Republican nomination fight and the debate they had last night right after we come back from this commercial break.
The market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now toll free 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
From K Street to Wall Street, to LaSalle Street, the Patton Boggs team knows how to pull off big business transactions. Come hear what we know. Patton Boggs covers the world.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Interrogatories.
Prima facie.
Pleadings.
Motion for summary judgment.
E-discovery.
Affirmative defense.
Stipulations.
Ex parte.
Amicus brief.
Subpoena.
Litigation is confusing. Trust the litigation team at Patton Boggs to make sense of it all.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
The same firm that's been navigating the government maze for more than four decades is also the same firm that can help you protect your most important assets. Whether it's a valuable patent, an important copyright, or your next big idea, Patton Boggs is committed to protecting your intellectual property.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. From Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's K-O-Neill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
All right, well, we had a great 45 minutes with Cordell and Nancy, but we're going to, Dr. Cindy, I got an email over the break from a Nancy. Dr. Cindy Pladsiewicz and Cordell Parvin talking about client development and professional development strategy. I want to shift gears and talk about my observations from last night's debate. MSNBC had all the Republican presidential candidates out in Simi Valley at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. Fascinating debate. I thought no knockout punches landed, but some real telling exchanges between some of the candidates that really probably are going to be indicative of their path forward for the next 60 or 90 days as we lead into the Iowa caucuses in early January. First, I was just struck by the majesty of the Reagan Library. I haven't had a chance to get out there in my life and see that, but it was a reminder that there was a day in the not-so-distant past when being President of the United States was something that more Americans than not treated with a great deal of respect. And as our political culture has frayed over the last 30-plus years, we've managed to tear the presidency down just a little bit if it's not our person in office. And you know, Reagan was, of course, a controversial figure at some points in time, but really a very majestic president in many senses of the word, certainly in images and in speeches and whatnot, and he stood the test of time. And so when I look at those guys up on the stage, I start from the premise of which of these guys look like they could develop into something. Of course, you're never going to be, as president, the person you are today. You're going to grow into that job. It's the hardest job perhaps in the world, and it really is going to take some growing into. But who's got the ability? So let me start from the back of the pack and say, you know, I surely hope that in the next few weeks we're going to put Rick Santorum and Herman Cain out of their misery in this process, because they're very capable guys. Santorum was a good senator. Herm Cain's obviously a dedicated and talented business leader. But I think the reality is that if the Republican process is going to focus on the viable candidates, those guys are going to fade away very quickly. So it'll be interesting to see if that fade away takes place perhaps in early October, when the third quarter fundraising numbers come out and we get a sense of whether or not, after their initial rush of supporters came through in the second quarter, whether or not there's been any momentum or gain, or if they're just sort of scraping by. For me, those guys both look like, with the attention they were paid and their efforts to stand out, they look like they're probably very close to having to pull the plug and may not even get to the Iowa caucuses in January. Now, I thought it was very interesting, Ron Paul's role in the debate last night, and I've seen some sentiment on Twitter and Facebook that perhaps Rick Perry was actually jabbing at Ron Paul for the twisted reason that the more time given to Ron Paul in the debate was less time for Mitt Romney and John Huntsman to attack, and that Perry perhaps figuring that an attack from Ron Paul would be written off by some people at the mainstream level, whereas a Huntsman or Romney attack would be taken more seriously. I think, you know, Ron Paul's a very compelling guy and a gentleman who's done some good work in Congress. He's obviously run before and appeals to a very narrow segment. We know he's going to have the money to go the distance to get himself to Iowa and New Hampshire. And the question is, I think the conventional wisdom remains that he's not somebody that's viable to be a credible challenger for the nomination. Even if he were to win Iowa, I'm not sure that would change the calculus. But I think he's an important voice that certainly gives a voice to some frustrated elements of the American populace. And for that reason, unlike a Santorum or a Kane, I think you keep Paul should stick around because he is making a difference in the debates and in the discussion about what our next president needs to do. Michelle Bachmann, I thought, boy, she had a tough night last night in the sense that here's a woman who won the Iowa straw poll and knocked Tim Pawlenty clear out of the race in early August. And that same day, Rick Perry steals her thunder by jumping into the presidential campaign. And she didn't get, she got a short victory lap in the media, trips to New Hampshire and South Carolina. But now she's sort of trying to figure out what her niche is. Rick Perry has stolen some of her Tea Party support. Romney cuts into her sort of mainline establishment Republican support. She looks like she's getting squeezed in the polls and having a harder time figuring out what is it that she offers at the table that's different and distinct enough to keep her in a front-running position. Now, I want to say this. I admire Michelle Bachmann. Here is a woman running for president who got there of her own volition. She started her own career as a politician, and she's been very successful at it, and she's not had to build her career on the back of someone else. And I think that's terrific for the Republican Party to have a credible female running for president, doing as good a job as she's done so far. But I thought last night she looked like she was relying on her old talking points, and she was trying to figure out how she fit into this new world dominated by Rick Perry. John Huntsman, I thought, had a good night, but he looked like he might be auditioning to be the Vice President of the United States. He still won't really mix it up with his folks. He was given a chance to hit hard on the question of whether or not he thought anybody on the stage was a crackpot or if they questioned science. And he took a little bit of a dig at Governor Perry, but I think he might have been employing a strategy that said, hey, look at me. I may not make it to the finish line, but I'd be a great guy to have in your cabinet, be a good guy to consider having, you know, to appeal to some other elements of the mainstream electorate in the general election if you want to make me your VP. And so I wonder, is he really doing everything he can to run to win? It's not clear. So that brings us to the two front runners. And you've got Governor Romney of Massachusetts, and you've got Governor Perry. And I thought, frankly, whichever of those guys you like or dislike, everything about last night simply reinforced your existing perceptions of them. If you like Texas swagger, you liked how Rick Perry answered the questions. If you don't like Texas swagger, you don't like how Rick Perry answered a couple of the questions. If you have concerns about Governor Romney and how he's going to deal with the Obamacare, Romney care question, they weren't alleviated last night. But if you think he's a great business leader with a lot of experience and he shows he's a reasonable man and he appeals to moderates, you saw a lot of that again last night. I didn't think either of them made any big mistakes, but I also didn't think either of them really changed the tenor of the debate. It was interesting. Romney has done a great job of remaining above the fray for weeks and months in this campaign, and he really has gotten in and he's mixed it up with Perry. And Governor Perry, I thought, relished the opportunity to throw some zingers, whether it was at Ron Paul or Mitt Romney or whoever. He wasn't afraid. The one person I thought who acquitted himself very well, I thought Newt Gingrich did well, but that people still look at Newt and say, great ideas, but I'm not sure you're the guy that I want, you know, running the place. And so I wonder if Gingrich is still auditioning to be a great surrogate for whoever the nominee is going to be and be a cabinet member doing some innovative things for whoever that nominee is going to be. I thought he actually did a good job of helping Rick Perry with a couple of answers and not trying to lead the pushback against having each of the candidates snipe against one another in some of the responses. But I ultimately, it looks like we're getting quickly to a two-person race in Governor Perry and Romney. And Perry's come out of the gate as fast as you can. Romney, I think, has done a good job of reacting in the next few weeks. The money race in the next 30 days is going to be very important as these guys circle the nation, sucking up cash in advance of the September 30th filing deadline. If Rick Perry comes close to raising what Mitt Romney raises this quarter, I think that's a big story. And also, as the media digs into the Rick Perry story, it'll be interesting to see what the public reaction is to that. We're going to be covering that a lot more in the weeks to come. The great news about tonight is we're hours away from the president's job speech, followed immediately by the kickoff of the NFL season and week two of the college football season. So you all have a great weekend. Stay dry if you're on the East Coast in these big storms, and we'll see you next week with more Capital Thinking.
Thank you for joining us for Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. We hope to have you join us again for more insight from Washington. We're here every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Business Network.